live from the Battleborne Broadcast Center. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company here on this Wednesday at Battleborne Broadcast Center. Lots of college football to get to. Alex White is here. Justin Watkins will join us in a little bit. Big show on the way. Big show on the way. Man, my head is spinning from the college football world, and I think a lot of people in college football, their heads are spinning because today is signing day on top of everything else that's going on, getting ready for bowl season and title weekend. It's crazy right now.
It is.
You had a crazy day. What was going on today?
Well, so World Series of Roping is at the South Point this weekend, so I was pretty fortunate. I got to go up there with some of the vendors and got a hat fitted, so I got a new beautiful, cowboy hat.
Those are not cheap. You got a freebie?
I did. We shot a promo and did some stuff there, so yeah, I'm very appreciative of the South Point for allowing me to be the model in that and get to get fitted for that.
Where do we get to see the modeling?
I don't know. We'll see. Probably social media. Checking Sports by the Book or South Point's social media.
So I know you mostly concentrate on the games, but you pay attention to some of the coaching controversies. I'm sure you've heard a lot about the calendar. And I'm getting tired of hearing about the calendar because the powers in college football, who are the coaches? There's no NCAA anymore that really has power. They're complaining about the schedule, but it's a schedule they put in place. And I was so glad Dan Wetzel, now with ESPN, wrote a story saying these control freak college football coaches lobbied for the calendar that they now complain about. The biggest impact isn't on them, however, but the recruits and their families who are forced to scramble here on signing day. This whole process is not a process. It's chaotic, and it's hurt the high school athlete the most. It's something we don't take into account. And there are some programs like UNLV has a class right now of 27. I don't know what that means down the road. I don't know how many are coming early. They've had a class in place of 20 plus for months and months and months. But like at Penn State, they have two commits because they don't have a coach right now. So I wonder what it's like as teams try to be old and get old, right? Or be old and stay old in the transfer portal, what it's like right now trying to get a freaking scholarship to a set of schools that you used to have a lot of availability with 10 years ago, and now it's kind of drying up and the process is like super quick.
I mean, that's true. Cause even in the articles that are about Penn State right now and how they've really dropped the ball and have not found their coach. And now today is signing day, right? And they only have 10 Power Four schools just announced in the last week or so their new coach. So that doesn't give them much time either. So yeah, it is tough.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
UNLV, I won't go through the whole class, but they had a key flip today. You know, my angle on high school recruiting now has completely changed because even at a place like UNLV, I don't know that most of them will get an opportunity to play. If they're in for the spring, then they have a chance. They had some freshmen play this year. Many of them, though, in the last four games, not to burn up their eligibility. And I think every freshman who comes to UNLV has a chance to play. But what I noticed with this class is, I think it was happening with Odom's group too. You can fix a lot of things in the portal. Like I think Dan Mullen moving forward with Corey Dennis as the OC, they'll be able to get skill players. Like they'll get running backs. They'll get wide receivers. They'll get tight ends. What is really hard, the most competitive market in all of college football, is to try to get offensive linemen in the portal because schools don't give them up. And then the ones who move on, a lot of them didn't play, so you don't really know who they are, what they are. And then even for those, the price is exorbitant. So what I noticed in the UNLV class is they really loaded up on big fellas. A lot of O-linemen, a lot of D-linemen. Mullen's, kind of Odom's back end of the class. Mullen's first class also had that. So that, I thought they did a really good job of having some big guys at least rotate in on the defensive line. But they have to develop within or in-house an offensive line.
Local guys or where? No, a lot where of was the recruiting
all from? Over the place. Some locals in terms of big fellows on the defensive line. They were very heavy in California when it came to O linemen. So and good sized dudes, 6'3" to 6'6", 6'5". That profile of trying to get guys who are at least 275 and not a fat 275 because you can go and get 6'5", 320 guys, but if they're fat loads, then that means that whole first year they're just trying to get their body in shape.
You got to imagine it's kind of nice for UNLV right now with California. Besides, you know, the USC's is a little bit of a mess, right? UCLA just got their new coach.
Yeah.
Stanford a little down. So, yeah, I could see going to California and saying, come here to UNLV.
The other thing is all your road games now. If it's USC, true, UCLA, I mean, let's talk regionally. Arizona, Arizona State, Cal, Stanford, Oregon, Washington. No one wants to go to Oregon State and Washington State right now because they stink. I'm kidding. But a lot of those California kids, like if you wanted to go to all the home games and add in a bunch of road games, because there is no regional tie for a lot of these schools anymore, you got to go 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 miles to go to some of the road games. So maybe UNLV and places in the what is going to be the Mountain West and the new Pac-2, Pac-6, Pac-8, whatever it's going to be, maybe they become more attractive because you can actually have your kid not only close to home, but you can actually watch all of his games within a short drive or flight.
And that is actually something we don't talk about often, but a lot of parents do like to follow and support their kids and go to as many games as they can. So that should actually be considered. So I would say, yeah, that's probably more attractive for Mountain West and the soon Pac-12.
Alex White, Cofield here on ESPN Las Vegas on this Wednesday. Battleborne Broadcast Center, Battleborne Injury Lawyers is the site. 766-1400 is the number if you need advice, you have a case, you need help. Give Justin and Matt a call, 766-1400. Call from anywhere in the state of Nevada and the rest of the team here at Battleborne Injury Lawyers. I am probably one of, I don't know, 10 people, 15 people in media who absolutely loves everything that's happening right now. I have very little issue around college football with anything. And in fact, I will push back. We got some audio coming up later on. The feds want to intervene. They're introducing a bill. A guy named Chip Roy, who is very much an opportunist, and you'll see him out front on a lot of issues, real or not. Many times it's not real. We've got audio from him on how he wants to fix college football. I think there's some tweaking that needs to be done. I don't think it needs to be fixed. I think we're in the most glamorous era of hope in college football history. We go into a weekend here. Think about this. We go into a weekend here where UNLV is a very outside shot at getting onto the dance floor, but you never know. North Texas, Virginia, who sucked a year ago. BYU, who I think a lot of Big 12 fans were like, nice addition, but are they ever going to compete to win the conference? Yes, they will, because they have more money than you. Duke, which sucked at football forever, is at least in the mix this weekend. I don't think they can make the CFP. James Madison, an FCS school, you know, half dozen years ago, they're in the mix. Tulane, which is mostly known for academics and, you know, partying down in New Orleans and has come up with money and a recent football tradition. Indiana, Baloo, was one of the worst four programs in the Big Ten forever. Those are some of the teams in the running or have already made the college football playoff or are playing in a title game this weekend that has CFP implications. And why is that? Because this system rules. Because now everyone can bring money to the table. And most importantly, what's the one factor I mentioned? And I am the only person in the country who swore by this 5 years ago that everything is going to get crazier in terms of competitive balance. And these weekends would be awesome. And one of the biggest reasons I pointed to is quarterbacks are not going to stay backup quarterbacks for more than a year or two on big boy rosters. They can go elsewhere, play, and make money. And you tracked some of the quarterback stories. This is tremendous what we're getting.
It is so awesome. I'm excited as I was diving into these matchups here, really looking at it, because Virginia and Duke are playing this weekend, right? Chandler Morris is the quarterback for Virginia, and Darian Mensa, who they paid a lot of money, Duke did. He'll be quarterbacking for the Dukies there. They were formerly Tulane's quarterback, and they were North Texas, who are playing each other in the American.
And still survived, right?
And still
they lost. They lost a quarterback, and they still survived. They made, because guess what? When a quarterback leaves, you still have the opportunity with your money, with your connections, with your recruiting to go and replenish. Now, here's the thing. You got to pick the right guy.
That's right.
And you also have to get breaks, because Tulane would not have been Tulane if BYU didn't have the honor code and said consensual sex is no good for a quarterback, made him bolt, and then he lands at Tulane, and then they have a good season. But that's not – you can keep going. There's more ties here on quarterback, the Derby. And there's a lot of places they picked the wrong quarterback. these places, quarterback is the most important position. What were the other storylines?
Well, the other storyline, really, because, I mean, Chandler Morris has been great for Virginia, and you said Virginia stunk last year. Well, guess where their quarterback from last year is? Here at UNLV with Anthony Calandria. So it kind of just works. Like you said, you got to get breaks, but you also got to pick your guy to work in your system. And if it doesn't for a year, you kind of move on and maybe they find a better spot. So I thought it was awesome. And I do think this part is rules for college football right now.
And not only did Calandria move from Virginia, where he lost his job because they didn't have good quarterback tutelage there, and he got to move with a guy who's a genius with quarterbacks and a great young OC in Mullen and Dennis, Calandria worked himself to a point where he is the conference player of the year. We'll have an interview. I talked to Calandria yesterday, and he's real reticent about, he's not going to bash Virginia, but he's over the top happy, grateful that he's landed at UNLV and he's landed with Mullen and Dennis. They've helped him a lot. And part of the story was in the spring, he was kind of acting like Virginia Anthony Calandria. And you saw stuff in the spring, and I saw a little bit of it, but they both openly said it, Mullen and Calandria. Like, he came here and it's like, I'm just going to keep doing the same playground football I did at Virginia that, you know, got me in trouble. And Mullen said, listen, if you're going to be a good quarterback in my system and a good college football quarterback, you got to complete like 70% of your passes. And Mullen said, he quoted the number at like, he said, Anthony was completing like 49% of his passes in the spring. And Calandria told me yesterday it was about 55%, but he's like, it wasn't good enough. It wasn't good enough. And that's why the portal is great, right? It's not all selfish kids, all about money. Sometimes coaches don't want kids. Sometimes coaches aren't the right match for kids. And in the case of Anthony Calandria, it wasn't going to work out at Virginia. Morris went in there, it's worked out, and Virginia lost their quarterback, or basically told him to get out. They got results by landing the right guy. Tulane lost a guy for $4 million to Duke. They get Jake Retzlaff. God only knows what they're paying him. There's so many cool stories, and most of these stories, those back end stories, are all about, okay, all is strong, a lot about the choice at quarterback. We'll break some of those down a little more in depth, but coming up, let's get to one of the big stories locally, aside from Anthony Calandria winning the Mountain West Conference Offensive Player of the Year, and that is big changes in goal for the Vegas Golden Knights. Controversial, but last night it worked out. I think it's going to work out long term, and we'll see where Ryan the Hockey Guy is on Carter Hart.
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
Back to college football in a little bit. Boy, the flood of comparisons between this team and that team, this is what makes college football great. All the metrics, the numbers, the head-to-head, people panicking because their school might not make the college football playoff. They're on the bubble. We'll get into all that. But last night was a pretty big night here for Vegas as Carter Hart made his debut for VGK. And Ryan, the Hockey Guy's in studio. We're hanging out here at the Battle Born Broadcast Center. Ryan's up with Alex White and Cofield. Ryan,
how's it going?
What's going on, man?
Not too much. You know, fun game last night.
Okay, well, let's talk about this Carter Hart thing, soup to nuts. First of all, what was the reception like from VGK fans? Because we know there's a lot of people worked up online. A lot of the reaction is anonymous, but there are people who worked up about Carter Hart back in the NHL. The home crowd?
They were very welcoming. I mean, nothing other than cheers for Carter Hart when he was announced as the starter ahead of the game. And, you know, you could just kind of sense that in the building, everyone was ready for him to get to the ice and make his debut. And it was nothing short of support for Carter Hart between the pipes.
So he made 27 saves. We'll get into the particulars. Overall, what would you give him in terms of a grade? I mean, in the end, winning is the most important thing, but how was he?
Yeah, I mean, he was good. You know, I think it's an interesting thing, right? Like, there were a couple of moments, I think, inside the game, inside the regulation game, where, you know, you could see a little bit of rust. I liked his decisiveness on the second goal to kind of come out, play the puck. Unfortunately, kind of flubs that thing, goes to Tyler Bertuzzi. It ends up being a goal against. But I liked how decisive he was in kind of making that decision. In overtime, he was tremendous. The main reason the Golden Knights were able to get 2 points out of the game is because Carter Hart made six saves in extra time, a couple of them on Connor Bedard, who I thought was just tremendous for Chicago. So in terms of, you know, Carter Hart, in the moments where the game got the biggest, he showed up, he made the saves, and he was able to be a difference maker.
What are your expectations for Carter Hart the rest of the season? Like, how big a role can he play for this club?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the expectations coming off of last night specifically need to be tempered to a certain degree because, you know, oftentimes with goalies, right, or just any player in general, when you're coming off of a long layoff, adrenaline, instincts, natural talent, they kind of carry you the first couple of games, and then you're starting to kind of find the consistency of an everyday grind and an everyday schedule. That all being said, I mean, Carter Hart's a career 906, 907 save percentage as a number one goaltender when he was with Philadelphia, and they weren't the best team defensively. So the opportunity here is for Carter Hart to be what he's been in his career, and if he is, then the Golden Knights are going to win a lot of games with him. Now, my guess is when Aiden Hill is healthy, you're going to have a tandem of Carter Hart and Aiden Hill, and those two guys are going to, you know, be a really formidable tandem in the National Hockey League. But, you know, right now in the interim with Aiden Hill out, you've got a potential number one guy, or at least a guy that's been a number one, understands what it's like to do that job in the league, and he's done it well. You can lean on him until Aiden Hill's healthy.
If you don't know the story of Carter Hart, he was one of five 2018 Canadian World Junior hockey players involved in sexual assault allegations. He was acquitted of that in July. The NHL lifted any sort of ban on those guys, and they could sign deals beginning on October 15th, eligible to start playing on December 1st. Adam Candy was very strong on the fact that he believes that Carter Hart is a creep. How much have you guys had a chance to talk to him? When can you actually give us kind of a judgment on who he is and how he comes across? Because I think this is going to kind of be a feeling out process here, because there's a lot of people at a distance who were like, hey, I saw what the allegations, I read what happened. We don't like him.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's entitled to their opinion, right? Like, I think that that's kind of an important thing to just put out there first and foremost. Now, in terms of, you know, actual time with Carter, he's been made available to the media a couple of times, obviously, when he first signed the PTO with the Golden Knights, and then, you know, right ahead of his first start in the National Hockey League in 682 days. And what I can tell you, what I've observed from Carter just kind of being around and seeing him, is that, you know, he's grateful for the opportunity, right? Like, it wasn't ever necessarily a guarantee, regardless of what the outcome was with the trial. Like, you still needed to find your way back. You still needed a team to kind of take a chance on you and bring you back into the fold. And I think to a certain degree, that's not lost on him. So I think more than anything right now, what you're seeing is a player that is grateful for a second opportunity. And, you know, the hope is that this is an opportunity that he's like learned from. You grow as a person, all of those things. And it's about what you do now in the future that's kind of going to be the thing that defines you, especially within this market.
Ryan the Hockey Guy is with us, Ryan Wallace, over on 1340 and 98.9 FM, our hockey station, as those guys do the VGK Insider Show every day, Monday to Friday, 4 until 6 o'clock. Why was last night's game in general important as the Knights get ready to go on a long East Coast road trip?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge in the sense that they've won back-to-back games, you know, for the first time in a little while. Certainly they were able to kind of get things going in the right direction on home ice, which was, you know, not something you could say through their last two homestands specifically. They went 1-3-2 on a six-game homestand. That's not typical of this team. And this homestand here, the four-gamer, didn't start particularly well, going 0-1-1 through the first two games. But to kind of save it with two wins on the back end, that's positive, obviously, for Vegas. And, you know, and I think the other thing, too, is how they won the game last night. They have not been very good this season past 60 minutes. They just haven't been. That was only their second win of the year in games played beyond regulation. They've got one win in overtime and one win in the shootout, and that came last night. So just being able to kind of get that win in the win column, to have a performance from your goaltender in overtime that gets you to a shootout and then to be able to win it is important. It's big because the Golden Knights arguably have left a lot of points on the table with their inability to find a way to win games beyond 60 minutes.
Ryan, Mark Stone's made a pretty instant impact on the team since coming back from injury. What have you liked that you've seen from him, and what can we expect more of?
I mean, this is like super oversimplified, but everything would be the answer. Like, Mark Stone does everything. He literally does everything. You go back to, you know, Mark Stone back in the fold, the Ottawa game. There was a penalty kill for the Golden Knights at the beginning of the second period where Mark Stone lays a big hit on Drake Batherson, makes three or four steals, and really gets his team going. So there's the play on the ice in all zones, all situations. So whether it's power play, penalty kill, 5-on-5, 6-on-5, defending an empty net, like all of those things, Mark Stone is first over the boards, incredibly important, and he is just kind of picked up where he left off through the first six games of the year. Now, all that being said, what I'm most hopeful for with Stone is the interplay between him and Mitch Marner. You're trying to find the right combination for Marner. That's been the main focus for the Golden Knights, Bruce Cassidy, over the first 24, 25 games of the year. And there's been spurts with Jack Eichel. There have been spurts with Tomas Hertl and Pavel Dorofeev where it's looked good, but not as good as it's looked in the first four games with Mark Stone. So it really does appear to me that Stone and Marner are a duo that can work long-term, and if that continues for the Golden Knights, then they'll just be a deeper team because of it.
Game that you are looking forward to the most on this East Coast swing: Devils, Rangers, Islanders, Flyers, Blue Jackets.
They're all good. I would say the Devils generally, but Jack Hughes is out of the lineup, so that kind of tempers my excitement for the Devils. The Islanders are really the team for me. Like, Matthew Schaefer has been tremendous for them as a first-year pro defenseman. Like, there is no hesitation in his offensive game at all. He is by far and away the most impressive rookie so far this season. So I'd probably say the Islanders, and then, you know, the Flyers, right? Like, I think it'll be interesting to determine how things go with the goalie rotation. Will Carter Hart start in Philadelphia? That's kind of a storyline that I'm paying attention to in the back of my head. But, you know, really, I think the Islanders are one of those teams that's been incredibly interesting at the beginning of the year, kind of dealing with some injuries, not so great on that front. But Matthew Schaefer, signed me up for that game.
Ryan, what's coming up today on the show?
Yeah, I mean, today we're going to go into last night's game, obviously talk about some of the important storylines, like winning beyond regulation, like the debut of Carter Hart, and we'll do our game ratings. Game ratings are always fun. It's a little bit divisive, but I've got a sense that we're going to hear some Eddie Murphy on the show today.
All right. Looking forward to it. Ryan, thank you.
All right, thank you.
There he is, RTHE, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Ryan Wallace, over on 1340 and 98.9 FM, our Fox Sports sister station. On the way back, NFL takes is what is going on with the Steelers, and are we going to overreact here to what looked like a really bad second half against the Bills, or we kind of take the Steelers approach, which is everything is okay.
Live from the Battleborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Monday was the first time I've come in for one of these shows, and everyone knows with sports takes, everything revolves around me. The world revolves around Cofield, right? So not to set it up like an arrogant ass, but it's really the first time, because I try not to panic with teams and organizations, especially that have had rich histories of working things out. Monday is the first time, Alex White, that I came in and I was like, I don't know, the Steelers, that was pretty depressing. The second half against the Bills, I think I got caught up in the imagery of seeing Aaron Rodgers kind of look like, we'll go way back, like Y.A. Tittle. I don't know if you ever saw the classic photo of Y.A. Tittle, like on his knees, all bloodied after a game in the 60s. And, you know, grizzled old veteran Rodgers just looked terrible. He just looked beat to hell. They didn't play well. The crowd's chanting fire Mike Tomlin. Steeler fans, in large part, in that case, I think are scumbags. I don't think you treat Mike Tomlin like that. You can get rid of him, but you don't have to be chanting five games less in the season, fire Mike Tomlin. But it's the first time I've said maybe the Steelers and Tomlin need to split, and Tomlin will find a home. He'll be the hottest free agent quarter or coach in the NFL. Where are you on this? Am I overreacting?
I don't think so. I mean, they're 6-6, and we're used to the Steelers being like one game over 500, right? But this just, it feels different. It doesn't feel like they have the same continuity that we're used to seeing with the Steelers. They definitely don't have the defense we're used to seeing from Pittsburgh. So, I mean, pair all of that with Aaron Rodgers kind of out of his prime, and then they bring Metcalf, and, you know, I just think it's kind of a mess, and it would probably be a good idea. This feels like a good time, and it's been talked about the last few years, and you probably don't want to go any farther than this by the end of the year. I'm not saying midseason for him.
I think the Steelers have to try one more thing, and that is an ultimatum with Tomlin. They have to get better personnel people, and the personnel people, if they're going to stick with the people they have now, they've got to have final say, because I get the feeling that Tomlin has way too much say, and it kind of feels like what's going on with what's going on here with the Raiders, with Pete Carroll having way too much say. Now, Pete Carroll has no equity in Las Vegas with the Raiders. Tomlin does in Pittsburgh. So it's a much tougher deal. It's very Belichick-like, where at a point the Patriots are like, okay, you can't be the personnel guy. You can't make the final decision. And Belichick said, okay, buzz off. I'm going to move on. They've got to do the same thing. And Tomlin kind of put it in Tomlin's court. Like, you can't have the final say, especially on offense. You just haven't been a great judge of offensive talent. And then there's, if they did separate, where he would land, where he would have a lot of control. Do you want, based on what you've seen recently, Mike Tomlin to essentially be your GM in addition to the head coach, unless he backed off it and said, hey, that's not what I want? Where does he land in the NFL? Or is it the crazy idea that, and I don't know how this would happen, because this would have to happen in like the next week, if not sooner, Mike Tomlin to Penn State? Where have you seen this?
Well, a Steelers own with Ben Roethlisberger. So I said I don't hate it, but then you just brought up Bill Belichick, and I've seen how that's kind of gone with him going from pros to college. And
yeah, but there's extenuating circumstances there. First of all, I don't think that Tomlin is an arrogant ass. He doesn't have a little stooge buddy like Lombo, like Lombardi, to come along and further freaking ruin things. I don't think Tomlin's going to get sidetracked by dating a 17-year-old, or however the oldest lady is, Jordan Hudson. He's 50 years younger than him.
He seems like he would be a good leader of college.
I think he could be a good college coach, but does he want all that comes with coaching in college? And that's the recruiting stuff and this calendar and, you know, year to year free agency, essentially. I'm not sure. I don't know what he wants. I think he should be in the NFL. I'm not sure that if he wants personnel making decisions, he should be with the Steelers anymore. I feel like we've had this conversation 10 times already, and the Steelers just move forward and they're like, hey, we're sticking with Mike Tomlin. So maybe that's going to be the outcome. Roethlisberger actually said that about Penn State.
Yeah, there's an article up on ESPN that he said it was time for them to finally split. Does it depend on whether they make the playoffs? Because it feels like every year it's kind of come down to that. And then they do. And then they lose in the first round. And then we're in the same spot. So,
well, it sounds like the fans are not really satisfied with just going 500 or above 500 and making the playoffs. So, and I don't blame them. They want to win games in the playoffs, and this season so far has not worked out. Maybe they can turn it around, but the problem is their dearth of offensive weapons really kills them, and the defense isn't the saving defense that it's been in the past. Coming up, we're going to go out to L.A. and find out what's going on a bunch of fronts. Lakers lost a really bad game against the Suns. USC is having a big celebratory day about recruiting. UCLA has its new coach, and then there is the situation at SoFi this last weekend. Where were all the Raiders fans? Man, they were... they brag so much about how they take over the stadium. They were there, but not in the numbers we're used to.
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, there's a lot going on in L.A. with sports, and obviously here in Vegas. The two main areas that the Sporting Tribune covers. Hawaii's in the footprint of the Sporting Tribune as well. Arash Markazi, CEO of the Sporting Tribune, is with Alex White and Cofield. Arash, what's up, buddy?
Not much. How are you guys?
We're good, man. We're good. We got to get you fired up here. First of all, I'm a little irked, but I don't really know what's going on, so maybe I don't have the right to be mad, and Chris Paul was being a jackass. What in God's name just happened with the Clippers and this final year with Chris Paul, because now it's ended abruptly?
No, I mean, this is the most surreal parting of the ways that I've ever seen. Again, you know, you have the greatest player in franchise history coming back for his last season, effectively a retirement tour. You know, no expectations to play, but obviously the expectation would be that this team would, you know, probably be as good as they were a year ago. Obviously, that part has not been the case. And, you know, Chris, from my years of covering him, has always been one of the more competitive guys. He always will get in your face if you're not doing what you're supposed to do. And I know that obviously, you know, he rubbed some of the players and the coach the wrong way. But for them to effectively waive him at 3 o'clock in the morning in Atlanta and send him home is absurd. I've never seen anything like that. Like, I mean, there's a way in which you have to handle these kinds of things with any player. Certainly your all-time franchise great, who, again, they don't have a jersey retired, Steve. I mean, Chris Paul was going to be their first ever jersey that they retired. And, you know, it'll happen one day. But, like, you know, he just posted a picture of him FaceTiming Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, smiling and laughing. But probably, like, can you believe this blank just happened to me?
Well, whose fingerprints are on this, Larry Frank's or Ballmer's?
Well, from everything that I've heard, it's Ty Lue to begin with. I mean, they weren't on speaking terms. I mean, so you really can't have a player not being on speaking terms with the head coach of the team. I don't know how that relationship devolved into the point that they're not on speaking terms, to the point where Ty Lue didn't even want to meet with Chris at the end. He just wanted to part ways with him. But I do think that there has to be an adult in the room, and they're, you know, in my view, whether that's Lauren Frank or Steve Ballmer, saying, hey, guys, you got to figure this out for the next couple of weeks. And if this doesn't work, if this can't work by December 15th, then we'll do something. The reason that that date's important is they're on the road right now. I mean, again, the optics of sending him home at 3 o'clock in the morning in Atlanta are just horrendous. But beyond that, they get back from the road trip and their next home game is December 15th. But that is also the date where they can waive him, cut him, trade him, or do something with him. I mean, the fact of the matter is he's still on the roster. They can't do anything until December 15th. And I think you would have had enough time there to sort this out with Chris, find a home for him, maybe trade him to a contender. But the way that this all played out was just really, really bad.
You were at the Lakers game last night, correct?
Two nights ago when they got blown out by the Suns.
I'm sorry, yeah. Two nights ago against the Suns. First of all, is that one of the first times you looked out there and you're like, LeBron is showing his age?
Yeah, you know, because like as a team, I wasn't surprised to see what I saw on the second night of a back-to-back in their third game in 4 days. LeBron didn't play the previous night, and LeBron looked like his streak of nearly 2,000 straight games of scoring at least 10 points was about to be snapped. And I saw him late in the game, like, looking up at the scoreboard and, like, trying to get to 10 and chirping at the Suns bench. And it was the first time that I had seen the Lakers with LeBron and wondered, like, are they better off without him or trying to, you know, you can't really trade LeBron's contract unless there's a superstar involved. But, yeah, I mean, it was the first time, like, I watched this team and I'm like, yeah, like, with LeBron, I don't know if the chemistry is 100% there. Now, again, they were getting blown out by the Suns. So, like, I don't want to, you know, make too much of one game. But, yeah, I mean, LeBron did not look like he wanted to be on the court.
More excited reception from Lakers fans, Eddie Murphy or Yamamoto?
Yamamoto. They love Eddie Murphy, the documentary that just came out, all that good stuff. But, like, Yoshi, I mean, he is a World Series hero, World Series MVP for sure.
Least heartwarming welcome probably for Dylan Brooks, who apparently pissed off LeBron James and got him going. We do have to mention something about Dylan Brooks. I haven't heard a lot of people talk about this. And the Suns. The Suns' reclamation here has actually worked out pretty well, and Dylan Brooks, out of nowhere, is a 23-point-per-game scorer. I think a lot of people think he's just a troublemaking bum out there, but he's actually turned into a pretty good player and an important player in the Suns' turnaround.
Yeah, I mean, that was the craziest thing, because, again, I was covering that playoff series a couple of years ago when Brooks was on the Grizzlies and LeBron really went at him. And, you know, there was this feeling of like, man, like, what team's going to sign Brooks? Because just the way he torpedoed his team's chances, he played amazingly well. And obviously when you do that in Los Angeles, you know, with the celebrities sitting courtside, he was loving it. He was eating it up. He was getting under LeBron's skin, which he loved. He talked about that post game. So they had their moment, and JJ told the media post game, I mean, like, this is a team that will expose you if you're not playing hard. And, you know, listen, I do think there are certain games on the schedule when you look at either 3 and 4 nights, second night of a back-to-back, where you're like, you know, maybe not to make too much of that game, but they did not look good, Steve. I mean, from the opening tip to the end of that game, at no point were they competitive that particular night.
Arash is with us, Arash Markazi from the Sporting Tribune. A big day for USC in college football. Yes, they're very much on the outside looking in on the CFP. They're going to make a great bowl game. They've had a good season, but the build for the future continues to go well. They are the first non-SEC school to finish number one in recruiting in the country since 2008. This is a monster class in terms of size, and Lincoln Riley really killed it for USC.
Yeah, I mean, this reminded us of sort of like the good old days with Pete Carroll, where, you know, Pete would obviously recruit the entire country. And I think the great thing about Lincoln was that he was really focused on recruiting the entire country when he got to USC, but he realized the importance of taking care of the kids at home. Again, California, certainly one of the top recruiting states, right up there with Florida and Texas. So he did that. He shored up his recruiting at home. And so for them to bring in the class that they did and to finish off the season that they have, and again, we'll see what they do in the bowl game. But yeah, listen, one, you know, they one win short of being a playoff team, but you got to feel good going into next season. The number one recruiting class, a lot of great players coming back. I do think USC is a playoff team next year.
Tell me about the excitement level around this Bob Chesney, who's not really a regional match, but he's won everywhere he's been. I think he's probably having to hold off the dirt balls at Penn State the last couple of days to not flip like a, you know, like a high school commit, right? Penn State's getting desperate. Give me the feel around UCLA with this hire of this guy, Bob Chesney.
I think everyone's excited that the school actually, you know, really went through the process and brought in a experienced head coach, a head coach who's very coveted around the country. You know, that wasn't the case with the Deshaun Foster. And, you know, there was this feeling when Chip Kelly left to go to be a coordinator within the conference. Like, I mean, that was really the lowest point you could get with the program. And then, to be honest, they got lower, you know, by bringing in Deshaun Foster, who was never a coordinator, who was never a head coach. This is a big time move for that university. Again, they need to do a lot to shore up things in terms of, you know, where they're going to play their home games next year. The NIL fund is not nearly where it needs to be. But when you have a coach in place that the boosters and the fans and players believe and trust, which they have here in Chesney, I think that's a big first step. It's a huge move in the right direction for them.
Arash, what was going on at the Raiders home game? As we've heard many times, SoFi, you put out some videos, you know, that the SO was there as a Chargers fan at SoFi. I mean, I kind of predicted this, that Raiders fans can only take so much. It's the, you know, the one chance in LA, though, they get to see their Raiders, and they didn't really show up in the numbers they used to show up at.
Yeah, listen, I tweeted that out knowing the reaction I would get, and I engaged a little bit more than I normally do. But, I mean, here's the fact of the matter is the Raiders left Los Angeles back in 1995. Like, there's no one under the age of 40 that remembers them being out here. And I actually do remember them being out here. I remember them playing in a half-empty Coliseum. So, like, this notion that the Raiders are still popular team in Los Angeles, I think is ridiculous. If you want to know what it would have been like if the Raiders – move to Los Angeles, go to Allegiant Stadium. That's what it would have been like. I've covered enough of these games in Oakland, in Las Vegas, gone to games. I know this was like back in the day when I was a kid, but I was at the Coliseum when it was half empty or that it was taken over by Cowboy fans. So I don't know this like alternate universe that some of these fans are in. Yes, they have a big fan base, and I really hope that they are a contender again, because I do know that the fan base is strong to the point that if they once again are a contending team and not just make it into the playoffs as like a wild card, but if they're a 12-win team, the fans will show up. But yeah, listen, for the first time in a Chargers home game, I viewed, from what I heard and saw and everything, that there were more Charger fans than Raider fans, and there was a lot of Raider fans who took exception to that.
Well, show up, right? Show up. You didn't show up. Rosh Markazi is with us from the Sporting Tribune, at Sporting Trib, up on Twitter. There's a lot at stake this Friday as UNLV will go to Boise to try to win the Mountain West Conference title. If it does so, it's going to play in the L.A. Bowl, which, again, is 2 weeks from, you know, under 2 weeks from now. It's on the 13th. It's one of the early bowl games. Who gets to sleep on your couch? Is it Steve Karp? Is it Willie Ramirez? Or is it me?
Yeah, no one's going to sleep on the couch. Very sacred place Beach. But listen, yeah. I will gladly take the group out for drinks at the show back. I think Adam Hill will tell you his love for that spot. But listen, the L.A. Bowl is a fun bowl. Again, SoFi is, a fun place to go see a game. I also always tell folks that because – and I don't know why they charge $50, $60 – for a stadium tour. It's generally cheaper to get a ticket for the bowl game just to walk around SoFi and see what it's like. So, again, hoping that's the case for UNLV, it would be great to see them out here.
Yeah, I don't know where they would stay this time. Last time they stayed in Long Beach. And Long Beach is, like, one of the most befuddling places to me because the team, and we were staying, the broadcast team, we're staying in this hotel that's, like, right on the main drag. You look out towards the water and you walk up and down the main drag there and down a couple of side streets and it's lovely. Then we turn the corner, we start to go like into a downtown area, and I'm like, the 7-Eleven two blocks backwards has bars on it and you can't buy liquor after like 6:15. it's a weird place. Like, obviously it has a lot of character. There was a restaurant in an old bank that I went to like 8 years ago, and I was like, oh, let me go back there. And then I walk up and it's this homeless people and freaking it's closed. I'm like, what the hell's going on? Two blocks this way and then two that way. It's totally different.
I'm still trying to figure out why they put you guys in Long Beach when the game's at SoFi and you got all those hotels by the airport and whatnot. So hopefully they figure that part out. But listen, like the Los Angeles Bowl, the L.A. Bowl, Bronx Bowl, whatever they're calling it, at least like that's a fun place to go. A lot of these bowls that are, you know, not fun to go to, I guess.
Let me tell you, the ultimate penalty could be losing to Boise in front of their stupid fans and then having to go back there 2 weeks later to Boise exactly. Again at the Potato Bowl. And I was told by someone like, listen, Boise doesn't really want UNLV back here again because Las Vegas, well, Las Vegas aren't going to go. So, like, don't send the team there because they ain't going to go. You're not going to get any fans who are going to freaking go to Boise in, you know, 14-degree weather. So, all right, Arash, we talked your ear off. You talked ours off. We appreciate it. Everyone out there, make sure you go to the Sporting Tribune. And I think I will see you soon. And, root for UNLV to make it. We'll spend some time together at the Shellback or somewhere.
Let's go Rebels. Thanks. I'll talk to you soon.
It's very hard to get together with Arash. I just saw him last week at all the basketball festivities. Like, I haven't seen him in so long.
Well, he's everywhere.
He is. I actually didn't even get to ask him. He was in San Diego for wrestling, so he's very much into the WWE. And I think Tony Khan and his whole deal, they're coming to whatever it's called now, Crypto Staples, whatever that arena is.
That's a topic that you actually enjoy asking him about, isn't it?
Wrestling?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, I still have like a mild interest in it, but he's really into it. So, which I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. I think we have people in the audience who like it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, coming up, we're going to get into what's going on. First of all, pros and Joes. Justin Watkins will be in to take on the pro. I saw the latest update with your VSiN contest. I think seventh place?
Yeah, I think I might be.
You dropped down a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay, but you're still alive.
I'm still alive.
You're still alive. Alex White, Cofield, Battleborn Injury Lawyers here on this Wednesday, 766-1400 is a call from anywhere in the state of Nevada number.